Morning, everyone. I'd like to call this Board of Supervisor meeting to order. The date is January 24th. The time is 9:02 a.m. I'm going to ask everyone to please stand. I'm going to ask our probation chief, Jill Silva, to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance and then remain standing for an invocation by Captain Dwayne Brazil of the Salvation Army.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Dear Heavenly Father, as we gather today, we are reminded by your word that you have not just reminded us, but you have given us instructions to pray for those who are in authority and leadership over us. And we do so today, gladly. We lift up the leaders of our county. We pray, Lord, that you would give them divine wisdom and patience and understanding. We also lift up the leaders in Sacramento and our new federal government, Lord. We pray for that transition. We pray that it would go smoothly. And we pray, Lord, as it affects us here in this county, that it would be beneficial for all. We thank you for these things. In your name we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Captain Brazil and Chief Silva. Okay, we'll move on to public comment. Today, public comment, it's an opportunity to speak on anything that is not on today's posted agenda. We ask that you limit your comments to 5 minutes, understanding the board can take no action on any of these items. And also, please state your name for the record. And you also can fill out a speaker card and give it to our clerk to make it a little expeditious. Okay, first up, I have Rhonda Lee. Rhonda? Alan, I'm sorry. Okay, so we went through this, just so you know, we went through this last, or 2 weeks ago. It was my first meeting as chairman, and I will mess up 26 times today. That's, hopefully it's 25 next week, 24 the week after. Thank you.
Board of Supervisors, my name is Rhonda Allen, and I'm a Modesto resident. I'm here as a NAMI advocate, a Homeless Action Council member, and a citizen of this community. As you know, we have a significant problem with homelessness in our county, but we also have a significant problem with severely mentally ill in our county. Our focus on prevention movement is not addressing the needs of this population. These are individuals too sick to ask for help. Many are psychotic and unable to make good decisions about their health. They are in denial of services, and they will never use the new access center or the low barrier shelters, despite the fact that many of them are homeless due to their psychosis. We are generally in the county only helping those that come in willingly asking for help. And our laws protect the people's right to stay sick. But this is not humane to allow them to remain sick just because they're not able to ask for help. Our most vulnerable and our most neglected also have the right to health care, so they have a chance at life with dignity and well-being. Imagine if this was your family member. These individuals and their families are suffering, and their safety and the community safety is at stake. We are overwhelming our police and sheriff's department with calls to pick these people up, but there's no place for them to go. They do not belong in jail, and DBHC will only keep them a day or two, never giving them a chance to fully be stabilized. They will return to their psychotic behavior, repeating a revolving door cycle that is costing the county millions of dollars. For a few severe individuals, they're costing the most in our budget for county health services. 17 other counties have now implemented this law, Laura's Law. Studies have shown huge cost savings to counties due to a dramatic decrease in hospitalizations and incarcerations because they're now receiving treatment on a regular basis under a mandated law. Our county would benefit from enacting Laura's Law to protect the mentally ill that are so underserved, also to help their families and our community. When we leave our most vulnerable unserved, we all suffer. You are in a precious position of being able to vote to implement this law and improve the quality of life for so many people. I thank you for listening, and we have other members here today from NAMI, family members who would like to share their stories to show how this law could help them. And I would like to leave some brochures of what NAMI does as a support system for families who have someone in their life that's mentally ill. And I hope that you will be aware of NAMI at least, because we are a free resource in this county. And I'd like to leave a little longer letter with somebody, because I tried to keep it short. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. Next up, Linda Mayo. Morning.
Morning. Hello. Is this all right?
Perfect.
Okay. My name is Linda Mayo. I'm a member of NAMI and the mother of adult twin daughters with schizophrenia and bipolar schizoaffective disorder. I would like to thank our newest supervisor, Kristen, for her support of the enactment of Laura's Law in our county. We also feel grateful that our advocacy for Laura's Law is shared by Councilwoman Christy Ayu. About 3 years ago, one of my daughters became one of the small percentage of the severely mentally ill who absolutely refused treatment. In our county, she was hospitalized multiple times and had multiple interactions with law enforcement. We were unable to get her the treatment she desperately needed. As a result, she became homeless, completely incoherent, and vulnerable to abuses on the street. In a delusional state, she boarded a bus to LA. We have no family or friends in LA. We reported her missing and finally heard from law enforcement that they had picked her up and taken her to a psychiatric hospital. It is in LA County that she finally received the long-term treatment necessary to attain enough stability in order to finally accept outpatient treatment. This was due to the enactment of Laura's Law. She now has housing and is actively involved with the county, with her treatment team. My goal is to bring Laura's Law to our county for all the other families.
Keep going. You're fine.
In this county who are suffering because they cannot find treatment for their loved ones who fit into this small percentage of the mentally ill. Although a small percentage, they are the ones that are requiring the most costly of services, hospital, jail, court, probation. And these costs keep money away from the less intensive outpatient treatment services, which keep them from going into the expensive inpatient treatment. So it's a vicious circle. This past November, NAMI held a forum on Laura's Law. Douglas Dunn, NAMI Contra Costa, and Randall Hager, California Psychiatric Association, presented a PowerPoint presentation and provided everyone with a period of Q&A. Douglas was instrumental in the implementation of Laura's Law in Contra Costa County, and Randall helped get Laura's Law passed in California and worked with Nevada County to get it implemented there. NAMI hosted this forum and invited all NAMI members, the Board of Supervisors, mental health personnel, criminal justice personnel, and the community at large to attend this very informative discussion about Laura's Law. There were over 80 people who attended. Frank Damro from Kathleen Gagliani's office was also in attendance. He has reached out to our NAMI affiliation on her behalf because of the large numbers of calls they have received from Stanislaus County constituents desperate to find help for their severely mentally ill family members. As they sought information from us on how they can direct these constituents, they have learned with shock, dismay, and frustration that for the most part, there's little that can be done. We would love the opportunity to meet with you and share the information, including a copy of the PowerPoint presentation, as well as the Contra Costa County Health Services report on the AOT work group recommendations. We have also had discussions with Nevada County, the very first county in California to adopt Laura's Law. With your invitation, they would be very willing to come to Stanislaus County and share how Laura's Law has been working for them. If this is something you would be interested in, NAMI would be very happy to facilitate in any way necessary. I appreciate your interest and your time on this issue that is so important to everyone who lives in our county. And I have some material to hand out too. I have a fact sheet on what Laura's Law is. And just recently, I received this reducing the number of people with mental illnesses in jail, 6 questions county leaders need to ask. And I'll put that in out there. And I have one copy of the PowerPoint presentation. And you guys can make the rest if you want more, because it's a big one. Anyway, I will give all of this to you.
Yeah. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you very much.
All right, next up, we have Josephine Lambert. Welcome, Josephine.
Thank you. I would like to appreciate being here, and thank you for listening. I have presented to each of you a copy of my speech I'm going to be giving to you, and on top is the pictures of my sister, the progression of her life. The first picture is her modeling in her college days. The second one is this crazy wig that she picked up the day she got out of jail in some garbage at almost the height of her mental illness. The fourth one is when she was released from the Nevada County Jail, where she was at her best mental state. And then lastly, her son at her gravestone. This leads me to my speech. Forgive me, I didn't think I was gonna start to cry. We have a broken mental health system, and I did not realize how broken until our sister Elizabeth was plagued with schizophrenia and bipolar disorders. On August 5th, 1983, a beautiful, intelligent, fun, generous, and full of life baby girl was born. Elizabeth received a bachelor's degree with the goal of receiving a master's degree in special education. Elizabeth worked 2 jobs, one with severely handicapped children at Beyer and the other tutoring children, both giving her high praises in her evaluations. It was in 2012 when life for Elizabeth began to go from bad to gravely disabled. The summer of 2012, her sister Elizabeth had multiple 72-hour holds. And in the coming years, countless emergency room visits and criminal charges in Stanislaus County, as well as a criminal charge in Nevada County. One summer day, Elizabeth was experiencing severe hallucinations, which led her to shooting a gun in our family home to defend our mother from an imaginary attacker. Elizabeth threatened to kill her daughter while holding scissors in her hands in response to being asked if she wanted a sandwich. It was this threat that drew the line in the sand that her family could not allow her into her home, thus leaving her homeless. My mother would be approached by many people on multiple occasions begging that something be done about Elizabeth. The word on the street was someone wanted to cause Elizabeth grave harm for the simple reason she was crazy. During her pregnancy, she tried to commit suicide and homicide to attempt to kill herself and her unborn son. Elizabeth stated to the police that her baby was evil and had evil blood running through it. Elizabeth was not given a 72-hour hold and was released almost immediately. It was after the delivery of Elizabeth's son in November 2014 that she became gravely ill. Elizabeth would not shower, did not wear any protection during her menstruation, thus having blood flow freely onto her clothes. Elizabeth was raped. She continued to hallucinate and talk to herself, defecated on people's lawns, and Elizabeth did not seek proper medical care for her mental or physical being. Our sister was not put on an alert list of having mental illness according to the county conservatorship department, the deputy of mental health at the county jail, and the police department, despite her behavior, despite the diagnosis given to her by the behavioral center, despite talking to the watch commander, and despite all the faxes I sent to the district attorney, public defender, and probation department. Excuse me, I'm getting angry now. It was in trying to help her that I learned of Laura's Law. Luckily, during her time in Nevada County Jail, she received proper mental health. Sadly, because Stanislaus County did not carry Laura's Law, there would not be any continuation of care, and she died 2 months after her release from jail and just 3 weeks shy of her son's first birthday. Our sister Elizabeth didn't think anything was wrong with her, but I ask you, if your sister or daughter were walking around with menstrual blood caked onto their clothing, was raped, defecating on the lawn, wouldn't you want to have dignity restored to her? Or would you continue to have your sister or daughter live that way? Laura's Law isn't the solution for everyone, but it has great results in counties that have implemented it, such as Nevada County, which restored our sister Elizabeth to a state of mental health our family hasn't seen in absolute years. If you do not want to do it for the dignity of the person, do it because studies have shown with Laura's Law there is a tremendous cost savings to the county from reduced incarcerations and hospitalizations. My family and I are asking for your help of Laura's Law to help restore the dignity of the mentally ill and bring peace to families in memory of our sister Elizabeth. Thank you for my time, and I have included my phone number if you have any questions.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Can I ask Supervisor Withrow, who sits on our mental health board?
Yes. Just to respond to you guys a little bit here of what we're working on, we very much appreciate you being here, and we very much are listening and hearing what you're having to say. And our new BHRS director, Rick DeGrette, we are trying to put together, and Stan's going to talk about that a little bit more, kind of a strategic planning session involving all the stakeholders and look at all the pros and cons of Laura's Law, what we are doing here in the county, how that's working versus what else we could be doing, and the funding for Laura's Law, all kinds of, anyway, we want to bring everybody involved and get everybody's input and make everybody aware of what is going on right now in our county, what kind of things we are doing, because there are a lot of great things that we are doing, and we really feel we're leaders in the state as far as what we're doing through our mental health services. But we definitely want to look into Laura's Law and see what possibilities there are, how much more that can help us. So I'll let Stan talk about it some more.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. We've actually had considerable discussions about Laura's Law at the county leadership level. And we've kind of gotten mixed reviews, to be honest. Laura's Law, which is also referred to as assisted outpatient treatment, involves involuntary outpatient treatment for folks as ordered by the courts. However, it comes with no enforcement tools. And so if somebody ignores the court order, we really have no ability to enforce the provisions of Laura's Law. It's been such a focus of discussion that when we were hiring our BHRS director, it was one of the questions and dialogues that was posed to him, I think, in every forum that he interviewed in. And to be honest, we haven't, while we know it's probably not a panacea, whether it's the right policy for this county or not, we're still having that debate. And so to assist us in that understanding better, the BHRS director has recommended that we begin a fact-finding and educational process about Laura's Law. And so we're going to be retaining the services of a firm called the Results Group. It's a program and planning organizational consulting firm. They're going to interview all the stakeholders and interested parties, including NAMI and others, to try to understand both the pros and cons, the interest and the opposition to Laura's Law. They're also going to interview key county leaders, stakeholders, law enforcement, mental health experts. They're going to host some small and large group focus group meetings with family and consumers and stakeholders. And they're also going to do some educational events so people understand exactly what Laura's Law is and what we can and can't do consistent with the law. Once they've done all that, they're going to go in and evaluate two counties, one that has implemented Laura's Law and one that is not, and compare the results that are coming out of the two different counties. And once they've compiled all that, they're going to prepare an executive summary and make a report to you as policymakers on Laura's Law. We're going to be kicking off the project. I'm going to look at our BHRS director, but I think this month, right? Almost immediately, we anticipate it'll take about 3 months, and it'll be at a not to exceed of $25,000.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, just last thing to say, just we very much hear what you guys are saying, and we are intensely looking at this and trying to figure out what's going to be best for us and best for your family members who are dealing with this. So anyway, we're on this, I guess, is what we want to say. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Next up, we have Robert Bendorf. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, supervisors. Name is Robert Bendorf with the HERO program. I guess before I start, it's kind of hard to follow up such a serious issue as mental health. So, that's a tough one. It's truly a problem in this state. So, but just want to get into why I'm here. Again, with the HERO program, Market Development Manager. For the Central Valley, and I've actually presented something to you. It was here before the board last year around this time and provided district updates on how the HERO program is going. Should have those in front of you. If you have any questions, please feel free. But this is kind of an update on how things are progressing. Kind of as PACE as a whole, last year you may have heard that the governor signed Assembly Bill 2693. Which actually enhanced consumer protections when it comes to the PACE industry, which is great. We were very happy to see the Assembly as well as the Senate and then the governor becoming involved and concerned about consumer protections. A lot of those have been implemented obviously throughout all of the companies, you know, here in California previous, but really being California as the thought leader bringing forward that legislation, we expect that kind of consumer protection level to go nationwide as PACE is starting to grow in other states as well. In addition to what is in 2693, some of the notes that are on the backside of the handouts actually talk about our consumer safeguards and what we're doing. Last year, we actually implemented 100% confirmed terms calls, which requires a homeowner to speak to a HERO representative before they are even moving forward with their project. So. We were doing that previous with seniors and making sure they understand the program and the details and over again, kind of thing, repetitively asking those questions and make sure they understand. But we wanted to take it a step further to make sure even someone that, you know, they may be 35, own their home, doing very well, but we want to make sure that they are receiving that phone call to really just, you know, just make sure that they understand the ins and outs of the program because it is a new financing category. Kind of some of the facts that are in the county. I know the handouts kind of outline your district, but it also outlines the county as well. You know, we're looking at about 57% of the homeowners that are submitting applications are actually moving forward with the project, which is great to see. It's also great to see that 43% did not move forward because contractors are actually presenting options to homeowners, whether it be you know, an equity line or, you know, some other financing option to those homeowners, and that 43% is finding actually a better solution, which is great because, again, we will push this until our last breath, but we know, honestly, that it is not the best program for everyone. We are simply offering a solution to your constituents that, you know, is in most cases is the best option. So, looking at into that, you know, just kind of breaking down the numbers. You know, most homeowners are being approved for just below $40,000, which actually equates because we don't lend over 15% of the property's value. So that adds up to about $260,000 for the home's value, which from the data I looked into, which is a pretty average home here in Stanislaus County. So it's great that we're helping out middle-class people that, you know, simply don't have the funds. And a lot of the quotes I have here in front of me, from homeowners in Turlock, Modesto, Ceres, Oakdale, all kind of stress the same issue that, you know, it works great for people that just simply don't have the money to pay for the an energy efficient upgrade that is the most efficient product straight out of their pocket. So it's great to see. I think we're really helping a lot of the homeowners here in Stanislaus County and just simply honored for the opportunity to work in the cities. And that's kind of it. I mean, just wanted to provide an update. I know As most of you know, this board has not approved the HERO program to work in the unincorporated areas, but obviously, you know, willing to do due process to get that taken care of one day, but obviously want you to know that even though the residents are currently in all the cities are available to the program, they're still your constituents as well, and so I just wanted to make sure that you're all informed.
Yeah. Any questions? Robert?
Thank you. Since TID and MID changed their policies, have you continued to see demand from the public for these programs, or have you seen that begin to go down?
No.
Or is it remaining pretty consistent and steady?
Pretty consistent.
Okay.
I mean, I hadn't heard of like a public comments about the utilities having any comments or questions on the program. I mean, I could reach out to them specifically to see, but I hadn't heard anything.
Okay. Yeah, moving forward, I just would be curious, and we can find out from our irrigation district partners as well, but whether consumer demand is remaining steady for these programs
mm-hmm.
as we look to whether we should adopt them for the unincorporated areas as well, or whether demand has dropped pretty significantly in light of changes to the rebate programs.
Yeah, and I know that in a lot of the utilities that I work with in other parts of the state, they actually use the numbers that we provide. The numbers that we produce to provide updates to their kind of updating of, you know, meeting climate action plan initiative, things of that nature as well. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other questions? Thank you, Robert.
Yep. Thank you for your time.
Oh, it's always a drive for you. Okay. Next up, we have George Apostolopoulos. Did I do okay?
Apostolopoulos. That was really good, actually. Very close.
Not even close. That was horrible. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, it's okay.
Say it one more time.
Apostolopoulos?
Apostle.
It's Irish. No, I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. Mr. Chair, members of the board, I appreciate the time today. My name is George Apostolopoulos. I'm with Y Green Energy Fund. We are one of the leading PACE programs here in California and across other states in this great country that we live in. And I'm here today so that you guys know what Y-Green has done here specifically in California. And I'm gonna provide some information as of the close of 2016. So currently we're operating in over 240 jurisdictions here in California, 32 of which are counties. And we have completed close to 20,000 projects, both residential, commercial, agricultural, light industrial. So we offer financing, the PACE financing, across many different property types. And with that number of projects, we've been able to save over 2.2 billion gallons of water, an economic stimulus of about 1.3 billion, 7,879 new and sustainable jobs. And in terms of saving energy, you know, I've got statistics here, but you can imagine how much energy has been saved for property owners that choose this type of financing to make those improvements for their homes. And in the other jurisdictions here in, particularly here in Stanislaus County, recently the City of Ceres adopted our program. Last year, the City of Waterford adopted our program. So I am your main point of contact for this area. I am the regional manager. I cover, it seems like, half the state. But I would appreciate your time at some point to get the facts about PACE, to get the facts about Y Green Energy Fund, and hopefully at some point in time we can sit down and discuss this. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Again, I'm sorry. Apostolopoulos? All right, I got it. I didn't put the accents in the right place. All right, any other comments? Anyone else? Public comment? Morning, Tom. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Chiesa.
Good.
I'm familiar with your age, and I want to let you know at 43 is when I had to get glasses. I know you and I are both north of 43 right now, so it might be something you might want to look into. But you know, it was interesting yesterday in agriculture. We've been very blessed this year. And with our blessings, also go to the blessings to the rest of the community. And I had a farmer drop by yesterday, and he looked at the pray for rain sign in the window and said, well, I guess it's working. And I guess it's time to get out that thanks for the rain sign as well. And But in California, we all know that we're 30 dry days away from the next drought starting. So I don't think we should let up on the gas pedal quite this time. Want to thank all of you for your support of the substitute environmental draft and the irrigation districts, and you're putting your neck out and doing the research that needed to be done, and supporting all of us in agriculture, because it's not just ag. It is the entire community. Anybody that uses water from our rivers, whether they use it directly or where their job is connected to it, or anything that they purchase is connected to that water, we're all in this together. At this time, on behalf of our board of directors, Stanislaus County Farm Bureau, we've had the great opportunity to work with Assemblymember Olson at the time, and I would like to welcome you to the Board of Supervisors of Stanislaus County. And if you're really into the water, and I know you've been very supportive of the water, Supervisor Withrow and the Water Advisory Committee will be meeting tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, if you'd like to see what we're up to. So with that, I'd also like to let Mr. DeMartini know that the bus to Tulare is February 15th and will hold your two seats. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tom. And the SED hearings, I don't think we've really ever talked about what a tremendous outpouring of support and understanding from the community. As Tom just talked about, it's not just ag that could be harmed by this. And I think about the way everyone came together. Doesn't matter what your view was, but understanding that this is potentially harmful to Stanislaus County. So I need to thank everyone. I got to thank the Farm Bureau, the irrigation districts, everyone. We're talking heads. You know, that's what we're supposed to do. But it's really the folks that were sitting behind us, the 1,000-plus people sitting behind us that bring the power to us. So we appreciate it. Okay, any other public comments? Seeing none, I'll move on to the consent calendar. Does any board member want to pull any consent items? Any member of the public want to pull any consent items? Okay, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
So move.
We have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Moving on to item B11. Approval of the Joint Powers Agreement to form a Joint Powers Authority that will serve the West Turlock Subbasin Groundwater Sustainability Agency. And Jamie Agers and Walt Ward will be presenting. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Chiesa, board members, CEO Risen, County Council Doring, Jamie Agers, Director of Environmental Resources. And joining me here at the table is Walt Ward, our Water Resources Manager for the county. It's hard to believe that it's been 3 years since Stanislaus County jumped into the groundwater arena. That's when we hired Walt Ward as our groundwater manager. We were ahead of the curve in doing so because it was 1 year later when the governor signed the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. Today represents a milestone toward groundwater sustainability, and you'll be considering the first two of what will be a total of 5 agenda items to form groundwater sustainability agencies. Much of the information that's included in these two agenda items this morning is germane to both of them, so our approach will be to give you all of the background in the first item, but avoid being too repetitive in the second item, and we'll give you a chance at the end to ask any questions that you may have. And with that, I'll turn it over to Walt. All right,
thank you very much. Good morning. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yep.
Yeah.
I hope everybody's feeling well and looking forward to a wonderful day. And Supervisor Olson, we haven't had a chance to meet yet, but I look forward to chatting to you about water issues. I've followed your career in the legislature, and I know it's one of your key concerns, and I'd like to learn from you and share with you ideas. This is kind of GSA crunch time, you know, when the governor signed the legislation back in September of 2014. You know, June 30, 2017 kind of looked a ways out, but we all knew that, you know, it was right around the corner, and guess what? It's right around the corner. And so what we're bringing to you today are two items pertaining to SGMA. And without giving you some of the background and the public and the audience, some of the context, I thought it was important to go over a little bit of it and not go into too much detail. But the cornerstone of SGMA is the idea of developing long-term groundwater sustainability plants. These are 50-year planning horizon programs with 20-year implementation time periods. And the idea of sustainable groundwater management hinges on avoiding undesirable results in basically six resource areas. These are called out in the legislation. And those six resource areas pertain to land subsidence, water quality degradation, seawater intrusion, stream flow capture, drawdown interference, and aquifer storage depletion. The cornerstone of SGMA is local control. And in other words, the state has given us the local authority to get the job done. If we can't do it, they will. And that's not a threat. That is their enforcement. So it is up to us to get it done. And to get it done not just for us today, but for future generations. And so the formation of the groundwater sustainability agencies starts with local public agencies working together. And those local public agencies either have water or land use authority. So it's all the cities, the irrigation districts, the county, et cetera. And you can form these GSAs under different governance structures, MOU, a memorandum of understanding, or a memorandum of agreement, synonymous terms. You can form a joint powers authority through a JPA structure, or you can also do other legal contracts, or actually go to the legislation, to the legislature, and have your have that GSA legislated. And as I mentioned earlier, the deadline that we're working against is June 30, 2017, so right around the corner. GSA responsibilities. Fundamentally, the coverage of a GSA has got to create full coverage as a single layer, if you will. Creates no gaps in the basin or overlaps in the basin. So you can do this under one GSA for the entire basin, or you can do it under multiple GSAs. But nevertheless, the GSA coverage, groundwater sustainability agency coverage for that groundwater basin, has to be continuous and provide full coverage. And as I mentioned, the GSAs have the responsibility to prepare and implement and enforce the groundwater sustainability plans. And these are the long-term plans that I mentioned earlier. They get at the issue of sustainable yield by identifying thresholds and triggers and measurable objectives. You know, you can't manage what you don't measure, and also taking corrective actions when things don't go according to plan. And again, they're 50-year planning horizon programs with 20-year implementation periods. Now, depending on what basin category the DWR has designated the particular basin, the GSPs have two different deadlines. The GSP, again, groundwater sustainability plans. So once the GSAs are formed by June this year, they'll either have roughly 3 or 5 years, depending upon if the basin is designated as being in a condition of critical overdraft or not. If the basin is in a condition of critical overdraft, the deadline for the adoption of these GSPs is January 31, 2020. If you're not in a basin or critical condition of overdraft, you have an extra 2 years. So the benefit is, or the urgency is placed on those that are in critical condition of overdraft to have their plans put together in an earlier time frame. Once the GSPs are adopted, you know, that's just the plan. The implementation is really the matter that gets the job done. And so there'll be corrective actions. There'll be 5 year five-year updates that are required. There'll be annual reporting requirements. So this is, I kind of think of putting together the GSP is fundamental and important to kind of set your roadmap but implementation is really where the issues will be. So if you look at the Central Valley, and this map depicts all the various basins, there's two different colors on this map. All the red color, magenta, however it shows up on your screen, are those basins that are designated as being in a condition of critical overdraft. Those are the ones that have that GSP deadline of January 31, 2020. If you notice, most of Stanislaus County is covered by the Modesto and the Turlock Basin. That's about 600,000 acres of land right there. Those are not. So in our area, for most of Stanislaus County, I'll show you another map here in a little bit, the deadline is that outer one, the 2022. As Mr. Orvis mentioned, with the SED and the State Water Board's proposal on the unimpaired flows, the reason why that our particular area is not in a condition of critical overdraft is because of our reliable surface water supplies. And it's almost as if to take that away would force us to have to paint our basin the same color and be in a condition of critical overdraft. And that just doesn't sound like good government to me. But if you zero in on Stanislaus County, you'll see that our political boundary overlaps four different basins. And the triangular piece to the top overlaps the eastern San Joaquin groundwater subbasin. That is a basin that's in a condition of critical overdraft. The gold color is the Modesto Basin. That's about 250,000 acres, all of which is fully contained within Stanislaus County. It is not a condition of critical overdraft. The purple basin south of the Modesto is the Turlock groundwater subbasin. It's about 350,000 acres. It overlaps with Merced County. It is not in a condition of critical overdraft. And then the basin on the far left to the west of the San Joaquin River is the northern arm of the Delta Mendota groundwater subbasin. It is in a condition of critical overdraft. So Stanislaus County overlaps four different basins, two of which have a deadline for the GSP of 2020, two of which have the deadline for the GSP of 2022, all of which have the deadline for creating the full coverage of the GSAs of June 30 this year. So we're here today to talk about the Turlock Basin. And here's a map depicting the Turlock Basin. The big diagonal black line, kind of northeast to southwest, is the county line with Merced County. The various color splotches represent different public agencies. You can see the cities. The grayish color to the west of the green is mostly made up of Turlock Irrigation District, and I'll show you another map here in a bit. Kind of that olive green color in the middle, kind of almost circular in shape, is the Eastside Water District and various other small community services districts and county water districts, Stanislaus County, Merced County, a piece of Merced Irrigation District is in this basin. Many, many different entities that have been working diligently together and very productively over the last couple of years on putting together the GSA structure, which is what we're here today to talk with you more about. Remember I mentioned the coverage had to be continuous without creating gaps or overlaps. And so over the last 2 years, the group that has been working on putting together the GSA has decided to create two GSAs for this particular basin, a west Turlock Subbasin GSA and an East Turlock Subbasin GSA. And this map depicts what that looks like. The blue it would be the area of coverage for the West Turlock GSA, and the green on the east side would be the East Turlock GSA. So two different groups working together to create one integrated GSP for the entire basin. So the two different GSAs, but would put together and implement one integrated plan that covers the entire basin. And this is allowed for under SGMA. So if we look at the first item, B11, it's specific to the West Turlock Subbasin GSA. It's a mouthful. There's quite a few entities in this particular subbasin. They have been working together for the last 20-plus years under the umbrella of an MOU called the Turlock Groundwater Basin Association. So they're largely building on work and efforts that have been underway for quite some time. Nevertheless, under SGMA, it kind of requires a new way of looking at things. So taking the TGBA, the Turlock Groundwater Basin Association that's been in place, is now transitioning this into a new public agency created under a joint powers agreement. The West Turlock Subbasin GSA is made up of essentially 14 different members, 10 of which have chair or have seats at the board of directors of the JPA that would be created. The other four are what are called alternate members. They're certainly engaged in the conversation, but they do not have direct voting responsibility. You can see the list here, the five different cities, Ceres, Turlock, Houston, Modesto, and Waterford, the Denair Community Services District, Keys Community Services District, Monterey Park Community Services District. I just heard last week that tonight Monterey Park may choose to go with Ceres, so there's still a little bit of jockeying around here with the membership. The Delhi County Water District, the Hillmar County Water District, the Stevenson Water District, the Turlock Irrigation District, and then the two counties. So that's essentially the membership of the West Turlock Subbasin GSA. Again, the group explored various different governance options and decided to go with a more formal creation of a new agency, which would be called the West Turlock Subbasin Groundwater Sustainability Agency under the formation of a JPA. And the JPA document is part of what we're asking you to consider for approval today, but goes into all the details of the powers, duties, authorities, the governance, the voting, the weighted distribution for funding, all with an eye toward developing and implementing the GSP for, you know, the long term. So there's a couple of handful of staff recommendations. The first one is for your board to consider approval of the joint powers agreement to form a joint powers authority that will serve as the West Turlock Subbasin Groundwater Sustainability Agency. So the first action we're asking for you to consider is approving the governance document. And within that governance document, and also with that, asking the authorization for the chairman of the board to execute and sign the document on behalf of the county. And then within the document, there's a couple of other actions that are required, and those relate to appointment of governing board members to the JPA. And we are recommending that as the standing member of the West Turlock Subbasin Groundwater Sustainability Agency, that the supervisor from District 2, Vito Chiesa, stand as that position to be a member of the governing board. And that as an alternate, that the county water resources manager, currently myself, would serve as the alternate board member on the JPA. And with that, I'd like to answer any questions or entertain your discussion.
Any questions? Mr. Ward?
No questions, maybe comment, and I don't know how we're gonna go on to the next one here and just get into the east one here too, but this will just apply really to both of them, I guess, as your comments have. Just a big thank you, excuse me, for what you guys have done and the work you've done. You know, this thing started out, like we talked about, three years ago really, where we started to try to stick our nose, where the county started to get involved in this thing, and we pretty much were punched a lot. Our nose was punched often as we tried to get involved. I think Supervisor DeMartini first started this with the groundwater ordinance. that he was trying to get through. It just was a continuous fight, but we didn't give up. We stuck with it, and we continued to push and continued to try to facilitate what's happening here now. And as a result, we ended up as leaders in this state with what we're doing here with our groundwater. And so I just can't thank you guys enough with the silos that you've broken down in this field, in this industry of water, the irrigation districts, the community service districts. It's been every man for themselves, and that's just how they've operated for a century, and that's all changed now. And it's as a result, I like to say, as a result of the work that you guys have done and this board has done to bring people together and get them to realize that we're better as a whole than we are separately, trying to fight these fights. And so I just can't thank you guys enough for what you've accomplished. I look at other counties across the state and just the clusters that they have going on, the messes that they have trying to put together these GSAs, and the fighting, the infighting going on between them. But we have broken that down here. We've gotten through all that and gotten people to come together. And so I'm just very proud of what you guys have done. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank the board for all your support. And I'll use a term that Sheriff Christensen often uses, which is it's a team sport.
It's not done.
Walt, I know that Turlock Irrigation District has the most to lose in this. What protections do they have? And what brought them to the table? Because they're the biggest purveyor of water, obviously.
Yeah, obviously, not a whole lot will happen in that basin without Turlock Irrigation District support. But the other big player in that basin is the city of Turlock, and through the JPA, you'll see that both of Turlock and Turlock ID have co-equal shares in the voting. And that's to if we ever get to loggerheads and how we might break that, it's to force things back to consensus. That was negotiated on purpose. And, you know, the city of Turlock is 100% dependent on groundwater. They've got a lot of skin in the game. That is their resource for providing drinking water to their citizens. Turlock ID primarily relies on a bountiful, reliable surface water supply, and groundwater is supplemental to their needs and to their customers. So there's a different way of approaching what those risks are versus the return on that risk, kind of a risk reward. And so, yeah, the way that the JPA was structured is, really weighted by what happens between Turlock ID and the city of Turlock and the other players. I might say the Stanislaus County has a very small percentage of the vote and of the funding responsibilities in that basin, because largely we don't have a very big footprint in that particular side. It's much different on the east side, which is the next item.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? All right. Open it to the public. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to thank you for the welcome and say I look forward to working and learning from you. As you may recall, when this first passed at the state, I can't believe it was 3 years ago. Was it really 3 years ago? Every elected official representing the Central Valley just went nuts. And we remain concerned, but I am so impressed with how far we've come throughout Stanislaus County already. 3 years ago, I would have said it couldn't happen this quickly and this smoothly, notwithstanding the fairly severe bumps in the road along the way. But the fact that you have ironed those out to get to this point already is a real testament to the leadership in your department as well as the leadership on this board. So kudos to you. I'll be watching closely as we move along and want to be working closely in partnership with all of you as we try to make this work and protect our water supplies for our future here in Stanislaus County. Thank you.
Look forward to
Thank you.
Okay. All right. The public, any questions, comments?
Supervisor Chiesa, members of the board, Tom Moore of Stanislaus County Farm Bureau, 1201 El Modesto. I think it goes without saying that if you look at that map, as we often see in the Water Advisory Committee and everywhere else, when you see the purple of the valley and you see the two white spots that are the Modesto and Turlock sub-basins, they're the shining stars and show people how it's done. And I think it's incumbent upon you and incumbent upon the rest of us that that you give your approval to moving forward on items 11 and 12 for the Turlock Basin being split into two and being managed as well as it has been. And as we've learned, non-compliance with the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act will be much like non-compliance with the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program. Eventually you will get caught and eventually you will pay, and it will not be nice. So I continue to ask you, Stanislaus County, to be the leaders in this program, and on behalf of our Board of Directors, we support your approval.
Thank you. Any other comments? If not, I'll return to the board. Entertain a motion.
I will make a motion to approve all staff recommendations.
A motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. On to B12, approval of the Joint Powers Agreement to form the Joint Powers Authority that will serve the East Turlock Subbasin Groundwater Sustainability Agency. Jamie?
Thank you. And as I mentioned earlier, we'll have a shortened presentation, and Walt will go ahead and get us started here.
Thank you. Yes, this pertains again to the Turlock Subbasin, to the East Turlock Subbasin Groundwater Sustainability Agency. All of the other things that were mentioned earlier with regard to the GSA deadline, June 30, 2017, the GSP preparation, the coordination with the West, all the ideas related to SGMA all pertain to this basin as well, to this particular group as well. It's just, it's depicted on the map on your slide. It is the east side of the Turlock Groundwater Subbasin. It roughly represents about 125,000 acres. Much smaller number of entities in this particular group. The GSA would be made up of six different members, dominated by the East Side Water District. Most of the pumping and the irrigation footprint is made up of the East Side Water District. But they're not alone. There's also the Bolico Cortez Water District, which is fully contained within Merced County. There's a small piece of the Merced Irrigation District north of the Merced River that's in this basin. The city of Turlock owns a piece of property out near the old Bolico Airstrip. So they are a member. And then the two counties, Merced County and Stanislaus County. So six different members. Working together under the formation of a joint powers authority to create the GSA, again working in concert directly together with the West Turlock Subbasin. Very same type of governance structure in terms of its framework and its duties, responsibilities, authorities, financing, funding, voting, board membership, et cetera. Very much matches with what we just talked about with the West Turlock. So again, same staff recommendations, asking the board to consider approving the governance document that would be used to form the East Turlock Subbasin Groundwater Sustainability Agency. Again, asking for authorization of the chairman of the board to sign and execute the document, and then seating a member on the governing board of the newly created East Turlock Subbasin GSA by recommending that the supervisor from District 2, currently Vito Chiesa, serve on that board, and that the alternate board member be the County Water Resources Manager, currently myself, to serve as the alternate board member. And with that, more questions?
Any more questions? I got to ask the any questions from the public? Comments? All right, back to the board. We have a motion to approve. Have a second?
I'll second it.
I have a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. This is a lackluster bunch today. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you very much. For your hard work on this issue.
We'll be back in 3 weeks.
We'll be back.
Three more actions for the rest of the other basins in the county.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're moving on to item B13, approval to rehire Kathy Quiros prior to the 180-day sit-out period as required by the Public Employees Pension Reform Act, Action of 2013. And Dr. Rebecca Nyanjo, right?
Yes.
Is here. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you as well. Good morning, Chairman, members of the board, Council Doering, CEO Risen. Welcome, Supervisor Olson. I'm here to request on behalf of the Health Services Agency approval to rehire Ms. Kathy Quiros in the capacity of a public health nurse for the California Children's Services Program. The California Children's Services Program is a program required by the state. It falls under the Welfare and Institutions Code. And the CCS, well, shortened as CCS, CCS provides services, complex medical case management services, for children up to the age of 21 who are diagnosed with physical and occupational illnesses that fall within that within the scope of what they serve. Currently, there are approximately 2,500+ cases that are being case managed. And unfortunately, we've had the position of Public Health Nurse 3 opened since 2014. And we've, since this has been written, suffered a loss from one of our public health nurses transferring to another county. So to meet that caseload, we respectfully request we be able to bring her back so we fulfill our requirements to the state, also to our partners, and to the children that we serve as well.
Why do you think we have recruitment and retention problems?
I think it's multi-tiered. I think this upcoming June, when we have the capacity to go and be able to negotiate, maybe we can look at some of the salary structure. But also with public health nurses, dissimilar from our just registered nurses, they're required to have a bachelor's of science in nursing, which creates a increase in competition in the marketplace, whether it's with hospitals or the clinical services. And so there's a host of things that not only it makes retention not only difficult, but recruitment, people being attracted to the position as well. And so this is not a Stanislaus County problem only. It's also throughout the state of California. And we're looking at every avenue to be able to resolve this much better, because unfortunately, under California Children's Services, this is a requirement. We are required to have public health nurses offer these services and be involved in the complex medical case management. So hopefully this upcoming June, and with a host of other factors intersecting at the right time, we'll be able to put something forward where we're able not only to bring them on, but to keep them on board for greater than 6 months to a year period.
Okay. So we've been looking, Rebecca, we've been looking for this position for something like 2.5 years, is that
correct?
Right? Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And it sounds like maybe we've hired even and then lost people. We've filled it and then lost them.
For this particular position, it's been vacant since I began, which was February 2014. So there has not been a public health nurse 3 in the California Children's Services, which is very different from some of our other programs because of the population that's served. It does require a lot of interaction, a lot of liaising with other partner agencies, whether it's insurance groups or hospitals or other physicians who are able to see these children. And so it's not the easiest job in the world, but it's also all of those other things I previously spoke about making it difficult.
I'm just curious, have we made offers? Have we had candidates come and we've made offers to them and they've turned them down, I guess?
Yes, we've had candidates, we've made offers, we've had hopes and fingers crossed, and unfortunately, that's not the only program where we have public health nurses. There are a couple other programs, and so sometimes there's a selection and they'll go into a different program or they'll get a different offer from a competing county or whatever the case may be, but it's remained vacant. And we were very fortunate, we were blessed to be able to bring on board Beverly Eldridge as our Children's Medical Services Manager, or CCS Manager, who has experience working here and has been here for quite a bit of time. But it's not a lack of effort on our part, definitely.
Yep. Supervisor Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for continuing to work on this. I can't imagine how frustrating it would be to have a two-year-long recruitment. For some reason, yesterday I thought this item was on consent, so my apologies for Marianne for thinking I had to ask my questions in advance. But one of the things I've wondered if we've explored, and this would potentially be a very costly program, but would be growing our own. And have we looked at opportunities to maybe provide scholarships to people who could go through the MJC or CSU Stanislaus RN to BSN programs with an understanding and a requirement that they come then serve as public health nurses here at the county. But I also understand there's a community service requirement or something related to public health experience before we can hire them as well. So are there opportunities there to recruit people before they're qualified and then help them get qualified so they have a sense of loyalty to our county?
There are definitely opportunities to do that, and I don't think it's been explored to the level where we can say, oh yeah, we've done everything possible. We haven't looked at that. We currently are looking at our workforce development programs and being able to recruit from those institutions. Pardon me. And so we do have contacts at Cal State Stanislaus and Modesto Junior College as well, and transitioning from just having the BSN to also getting the public health nursing certificate is something that that has certainly been brought forward and we're willing to explore further.
Okay, great. In reading the report, it looked like we're down maybe 7 or 8 nursing positions total. So I just think as you continue to your work, and I know your department is doing this, but maybe we need a very comprehensive report looking at how we can face the challenges that are statewide, as you mentioned, when it comes to the shortage of providers in maybe new and unique ways to try to attract more people to our county.
Absolutely. We're definitely looking to innovative models to bring more people in and do what we can with the resources we have. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Anyone in the public want to comment? Please. Mike, state your name for the record.
Afternoon or morning, board. As a parent of a kid that uses CCS, I think it's definitely something that we'd like to see explored in Stanislaus County. I think one of the biggest things is having the BA requirement and trying to figure out retention, because it's hard seeing those kids daily. I think a lot of people leave because they can't handle the stress of seeing kids, you know, either not make it or, you know, extremely disabled. So I would love to see something that, you know, in Stanislaus County where we could come up with some way to keep those nurses and or be able to even hire them, because I have friends that are nurses and they would much rather go to a hospital and work 3 days, 3 12s, than work with kids, you know, in a situation that's maybe not as comfortable. So maybe some sensitivity training. But, you know, as someone that benefits from that, I'd like to see some work on that too. So thank you guys for what you guys do.
Can you state your name, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. Mike Reynolds.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
This position is just limited to 960 hours. So if you don't recruit somebody when those 960 hours are up, then the position's still vacant.
Yeah, and to speak to Supervisor Olson's point, making sure that we have some type of construct or framework where we're able to attract, you know, for this type of medical case management, there are training opportunities available throughout the state and whatnot, but CCS, California Children's Services Program, it has been difficult. I mean, even at the state level, which falls under the Department of Healthcare Services, they say, oh yeah, yeah, you know, they'll take note of the fact that there's a difficulty in retaining for some of the reasons that were brought up here today. And so we will try and develop a framework where we're able to not only bring somebody in, but keep them in, because this is a supervisory level position, and there's a dearth, there's a great need for it. It's a critical need position.
Okay. No other comments? Entertained motion?
I'll move to approve staff recommendations.
B13, do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Again, unanimously carried. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your
time. Appreciate it, Doctor. All right, no scheduled matters. Let's move on to correspondence.
This board has received a notice of public hearing from the California from the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board regarding a proposed amendment to the water quality control plans for the Sacramento River and the San Joaquin River basins and the Tulare Lake Basin.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office, Department of Environmental Resources, and the Ag Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received from the California Department of Transportation a notice of availability of the draft environmental impact report environmental assessment for the State Route 132 West Freeway Expressway project and the draft final remedial action plan for the Caltrans Modesto soil stockpiles.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office, Department of Public Works, and the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received a letter regarding the update on the flood hazard mapping activities from the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
Refer to the Department of Public Works.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims. Refer to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports? Seeing none, how about Legislative Fiscal and Management Report, Chief Executive Officer?
Yeah, just two things real quick. Our county departments continue to digest the governor's proposed budget. What has kind of surfaced to the top on our radar is some of the changes that he's proposing relative to IHSS. As you may remember, a number of years ago, there was a change in how IHSS was, the county share cost was approached, and we were given a maintenance of effort. Since that maintenance of effort was established, the state instituted some new minimum wage laws, which will have some significant impacts on IHSS. And so I think the state, preferring not to pay for those costs, decided to shift it back to the county and remove that maintenance of effort cap and take us back to having a 35% share of the cost. So that could have a significant impact to our community services agency. And so we're hoping we can get a full court press from CSAC and see what we can do, because this is a, like I said, a significant impact in the state budget. One other note, the governor declared a state of emergency in 50 counties across California following the severe winter storms, and Stanislaus County was included in his proclamation. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. And if I could also comment, I think the total cost of the shifting of the MOE back to the counties is about $625 million. The 35% is only, it's of the portion that is state and federal. The federal government pays for 50%, and 35% of the other 50% is our responsibility, which is about 17.5% of the total cost of the program. So, and we're all going to need to be vigilant on this issue if they transfer those costs. I think it's about, depending on how realignment growth is, it could be about $1 million to us, probably off the get-go. So. Okay, with that, we do have a closed session. I'm going to go ahead and adjourn our regular session, and I'm going to turn it over to County Council Doring. I did board reports.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have closed session to have conference with labor negotiators. The agency negotiators are Stan Risen, Tamara Thomas, Brandy Hopkins, and Jody Hayes. The labor organizations under discussion is the Stanislaus Sworn Deputies Association and the Stanislaus Regional Emergency Dispatchers Association. This will be held pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6, and we do not expect a report out. It would be appropriate to ask if there are any public comments.
Yep. Any public comments? Seeing none, we will adjourn to closed session.